guy. Yeah, I'm just.
I don't know why this projector is not working. Maybe the bulb's burned out. I don't know. I'm sorry, this is technical difficulties here. I can't get the projector to work. Let's see if we can reboot the system and see if that helps. Well, apparently not. Okay, so I'm going to wing it. I'm just going to improvise instead of working from prepared slides. I did record my 9:30 lecture, and I'll post that. But yeah, unfortunately for those of you online, yeah, I'll try to keep track with the slides, even though in class I'm not unable to display the slides. But I'll try to adhere to them. It's just that I'll be writing more on the blackboard than normal. Okay, so let me remind you where we're at. We're trying to solve linear systems, large systems of linear equations. And what I showed you last time, that it's possible to actually solve these systems by manipulating the equations rather than the variables, and that you can systematically transform the equations from whatever they started off as to the equations of the solution using only operations that preserve the solution set, preserve the points in space that actually satisfy the equations. And so I did that one example of that, but what I began to describe on Wednesday was a more efficient way of doing that, where instead of constantly rewriting the equations, we manipulate a single matrix. That matrix, it's called the augmented matrix. And it has the form of where you take the, say we have a system of equations, A11 x1 plus dot 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 plus A1m xm equals B1, and more equations, A, say n equations in m variables. A and m xm equals bn. The system of equations can be encapsulated in a single matrix. You take the coefficients of the variables, arrange them in an n by m matrix, and then you append to that. This would be the coefficient matrix when we write this system as a matrix equation. But so the coefficients there are captured there. We ignore the variables, but we do capture the numbers that appear on the right-hand side as the last column of this augmented matrix. And the point is that you can go from equations to augmented matrix and augmented matrices back to equations. Going the opposite direction, you just have to remember that each column on the left-hand side corresponds to a particular variable. The way you recover the first equation is you look at the first row and you go A11 times X1 plus A12 times X2, et cetera, A1n times Xm. And then this line means you now convert to, think of this as an equal sign, equals B1. And so I've got the data that goes into specifying the system of equations all encapsulated in this single matrix. Instead of manipulating the equations, we'll manipulate this matrix until we reach a matrix in what's called reduced row echelon form. That will be an augmented matrix again, but it will be the augmented matrix of the solution. And so I'll write this symbolically as A prime, B prime. If this was the original augmented matrix, coefficient matrix, with the last column thing. The idea is to take this matrix and do operations that mimic the operations we could perform on equations directly until we get it into reduced row echelon form. And then we get convert back to equations and we get the equations of the solution. Okay, so let me review the nomenclature we've developed so far. Let's see. The augmented matrix. Then describe. Okay, so the question would then be, well, how do I actually go from here to the augmented matrix of the solution? We use operations that are not going to change the solution set. And of those, there are three types. First of all, we can take two rows and simply reverse their order in the matrix. If this is the first slot and the last slot, I would move the last row up the top from the top down to the bottom, for example. So that's one thing we're allowed to do. A second thing we could do, we could replace the ith row
by a scalar multiple of itself. But because we don't want to lose information, we don't want to multiply a row by zero, because that would just make the whole row zero, and the equation that would correspond to a line of the augmented matrix where you only had zeros would be 0 times x1 plus 0 times x2 plus 0 times xm is equal to 0, which would just be the equation 0 is equal to 0. So we will have lost information if we have lost a condition if we multiply by 0. But as long as we multiply by a non-zero number, then we don't lose any information. Put another way, if I multiply by one, if I multiply by 1/2, I can get back to where I started by multiplying by 2. But if I multiply by 0, I can't divide out by 0, and so I ended up losing information. So this is not a problem. I just want you to be aware that you don't want to be multiplying by 0. And then the third thing that we can do, and this is probably the most common thing you do in the process of row reduction, is you take a row and you replace it with its sum, in general, with a multiple of another row. And so the ith row gets replaced by its sum with a multiple of another row. Now, each of these operations is performed on a particular row of the augmented matrix. And so we call them elementary row operations. What they correspond to at the level of equations are operations that don't change. Yeah?
Do we use the row change only to get it into the row of the reduced epsilon?
Yeah, yeah. I think so. I mean, maybe if you're looking a little bit ahead in your calculation, you see that I'm going to have to do this eventually. I might as well do it now. You don't always, I mean, you can be you can be more strategic, but generally speaking, you're going to use these three kinds of operations to, the point is to go from the original matrix down to the matrix of your solution. And these are the allowed operations. They won't change your solution set. If you do something else, then you're, pardon?
You don't want to switch the row to get the point
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm going to explain that today. Okay. So what I've explained so far is I remind you what an augmented matrix is, what our elementary row operation is. Now we're getting to your point. What is a matrix in reduced row echelon form? That's going to be something we'll be able to spot visually. We'll look at a matrix and we can tell immediately if it's in the right form or not. And moreover, having that visual idea of what we're shooting for will tell us what we need to do next at any given step. So first of all, row echelon form. I'll describe it verbally, but it's really visually that you want to see this. So a matrix is in row echelon form I'll usually be abbreviating this as REF. And pivots in upper rows appear to the left of pivots in lower rows. What I mean by this, a pivot means the first non-zero entry in a row. So that's what you're focusing on. We have a matrix 1, 2, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0. I'm underlining the pivots. These are the guys you watch during this calculation. And the other entries, well, you manipulate them, but your focus is always on what's happening with the pivots. And this matrix is in row echelon form. I should put one more restriction here. This row is all zeros. It has no pivots. You want those at the bottom of the matrix. And so with zero rows at the bottom. All right, then, and so this is a matrix in row echelon form. Is it in reduced? Yeah, it's also in reduced row echelon form. Why? Because in reduced row echelon form, here you want row echelon form. All right, that's okay. Here are your pivots. As you move down, pivots move off to the right. The pivots always equal one for this matrix. And thirdly, above and below pivots, only zeros. So if you look at the pivot, in this column that contains the pivot, I have only zeros besides the pivot itself. Same thing here, only zeros. This is the kind of matrix we're shooting for, because it's going to when we have an augmented matrix in reduced row echelon form, it's going to correspond to the augmented matrix of the solution. What I want to describe to you today is how do you go from an arbitrary matrix to the standard form for the augmented matrix of the solution. And I'm going to do this in several steps. The main thing I want to show, which is going to be the meat of the problem in general, is to how to get a matrix in row echelon form. Okay, so let's see. By the way, I'm wondering, I guess my computer's on. Is it going to? Well, even if even if I do that, okay. I'm still trying to think of maybe I could use the computer here to display, but I can't. All right, so that's a bit of a problem. I'm working. I'm unfortunately on this side of the blackboard because that's where the camera is pointed. All right, so let me show you an example where I explicitly convert a matrix to row echelon form. All right, so the matrix I'm going to start off with is going to be 0, 1, 0, 1, 3, 1, 2. 2, and then the second row I have 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. Third row I have 1, 0, 1, 0, 0. And the fourth I have 1, 1, 0, 1, 1. Okay, so it's a rather large matrix. Yeah, I'm not putting the line here because I'm just looking at the matrix itself and not yet interpreting it as the augmented matrix of a linear system, because these row operations don't require you to put a line there. So I'm just going to ignore that for now. All right, so this matrix is not in row echelon form. Look at where the pivots live. And you see they're not following this staircase pattern from the upper left to the lower right. So what we'll do is rearrange this matrix using the elementary row operations. First thing I'll do, seeing this zero row, is I'm going to put it right at the bottom of the matrix. So the operation I'll use is I'll take row 2, and I'll interchange it with the fourth row. All right, so that will produce a new matrix. The first row is not changing. 1, 3, 1, 2. Second row, I'll use now the last row, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1. Second row is moved to the bottom, and the third row has been left unchanged. All right, good. So now I got the zero row at the bottom, but there's no pivot in this upper corner, and this is where you want to start when you start the process of row reduction. You want to start initially at this upper corner, and you're going to work your way down towards this last row in this last corner. So what I'll do is I'll somehow get a pivot up here, a pivot that I can work with. And a nice one to grab is I'll just interchange two more rows. So here I'll now switch row one and row two. And what I'll end up with is 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 3, 1, 2, 0, 1, 3, 1, 2, I interchanged two rows and I'm not affecting the bottom two rows, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. Good, look what we've got so far. At least the first two rows are in row echelon form, but this guy, so I moved from the second row to the third, the pivot is moving off to the left. It should be moving off to the right. What I'll do is I'll use this entry in the first row to effectively cancel this guy. Now, I don't simply just scratch this guy out and replace it with a zero. I have to use an elementary row operation. So the next step would be, now we'll go, we'll send the third row. I'm going to replace it with the third row minus the first row, because 1 minus 1 is going to equal 0, and I'll get a 0 in that slot. First row is not changing, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1. Second row is not changing, 0, 1, 3, 1, 2. The third row is changing, 1 minus, the third row minus the first row, 1 minus 1 is 0. Good. That's the thing we were trying to do. And then 0 minus 1 is -1. 1 minus 0 is 1. 0 minus 1 is -1. And 0 minus 1 is -1. Notice how fast I can do these manipulations. It's not like if I had to add equations together and get a new equation, it'd be much more tedious. I'd have to keep track of the variables and the coefficients. But here, I just have to keep track of the position of the entries of the various rows and make sure entries in the same column get combined. Okay, so, and then the last row stays 0. All right, so what I did here, yeah, there's the operation I performed. And now, oh, good. It's still not in row echelon form because, well, I got rid of this problem. I still have a pivot below a pivot. And so I'm going to need to get rid of that guy. So what I'll do is I'll send the third row. I'll operate it on again, this time sending to its sum with the second row. I'm trying to get rid of this term, so I add this row to it, and I'll get an exact cancellation. So I get 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 3, 1, 2. I'm just rewriting the first two rows. The operation is going to act on the third row. 0 plus 0 is 0. 1 plus minus 1 is 0. 3 plus 1 is 4. 1 minus 1 is 0. And 2 minus 1 is 1. Last row is unchanged.
Did you get multiple answers for these?
Pardon?
Did you get like multiple answers of the reduced echelon matrix?
No. There are many. The statement I guess I should make is when you go to row echelon form, many, infinitely many different ways to write down the but when you get it to reduced row echelon form, it's unique. Luckily, I'm not going to prove that in this course. It's hard to prove, but in fact, it's true. In some sense, you can see it from the algorithm. You know, as I describe it, you see you're going to end up in one final destination. Then the question would be, what if you took a different route to get to that?
Yeah, I took a different route.
Yeah, you'll get a slightly different answer, but we haven't yet got to reduce row echelon form. And so, but now, if you look where the pivots live, you see at least we've got to row echelon form. All right, so this is what happens in the first stage of this process we call row reduction. We take an arbitrary matrix, and the first task is to get it into row echelon form. The way you do that is, first of all, You start up in this upper corner. If there's nothing there, then you may move some rows around so you get a pivot up in this upper corner. But then you get your starting point, and you can, I guess starting here, you can begin to remove entries below pivots and higher rows. You'll start it with the first row and clear out all the entries below its pivots. And that led to this. And then we stare at the result and we see, okay, we got rid of this guy, but now we have a pivot directly below the pivot in the second row. Pivots in the higher rows have priority. You use them to eliminate the entries below, non-zero entries below them. And so the next step was to clear out this entry. Again, I did another elementary row operation. And in the end, as I descend through this matrix, I'm naturally clearing out all the entries below the pivots. And that will, when you do that, all the zeros are going to be concentrated sort of in this lower left-hand corner, and the non-zero numbers are going to get kind of pushed up into this upper right-hand corner. And so sometimes we call these such matrices upper triangular. So you see how the non-zero entries tend to be up in this corner. All right, but this is just row echelon form. I've only got the pivots arranged correctly, but my pivots are not all equal to one yet, nor have I cleared out the entries that lie above pivots. So in this pivot in the second rule, I have a non-zero number, and to get it in reduced row echelon form, I'd have to get rid of that guy. All right, so in my slides, flashing through this, let's move on. I think I have a different example. Yeah. One that won't require so much writing. The next example I want to give you is, okay, if you've reached row echelon form, what do you do next? And so in this example, I think the matrix is 2, 4, 1, 0, 3, 6, and 0, 0, -1. So that's in row echelon form, but not reduced row echelon form. What do I do to put it in reduced row echelon form? The first thing you should try to do is get those pivots equal to one. Easy to do. This pivot is 2. So let's divide that first row by 2. And this pivot is 3. So let's divide the second row by 3. And we'll get a new matrix, 1, 2, 1/2. 0, 1, 2, and 0. Oh, let's send up the third row also to minus the third row. That'll be 0, 0, 1. Okay, so I just using scalar factors, I can easily convert these pivots to the value 1. All right, now what remains is to get rid of these entries that lie above pivots. You've got zeros below the pivots, but now you want to get rid of the entries above pivots. And at this stage, like what we did in the stage 1, where we were trying to clear out entries below pivots, only instead of starting at this upper corner, you start at the bottom one. You work your way up there, and then you move up and sort of in an exact opposite direction you were moving before. So what we'll do here is maybe we'll send row 1 to row 1 minus 1/2 row 3. What I'm arranging is for this pivot to cancel that entry in the first row. And we can simultaneously do the second row. It's not going to confuse us, I don't think. We want to get rid of that 2, so we'll subtract 2 times the third row from the second row. And the matrix that will result will be, let's see, 1, 2. So 1 minus 1 half times 0 is 1. 2 minus 1 half times 0 is 2. 1 half minus 1 half times 1 is 0. And what this operation will do will be 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1. Okay? So I changed two rows in that matrix just using effectively this operation of adding a multiple of one row to another. And now the last problem we have is we have a pivot with a non-zero entry above it. And so again, I'll use a sum of two rows to cancel that. So I'll send row 1 to row 1 minus 2 times row 2. All right, I'm trying to get rid of that guy. And the resulting matrix will be, let's see, 1 minus 2 times 0 is 1. 2 minus 2 times 1 is 0. 0 minus 0 is 0. And then here we have, I guess that's all he was doing. 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1. All right. Now we're in reduced row echelon form. Here are your pivots. They're all equal to 1. And above and below pivots, I have nothing but zeros. Okay, so now that's the procedure. And let me next try to do a full example. Well, start with a system of equations, and I'll show you the entire process by which we extract the solution set using this row reduction algorithm. Okay, so the system I have in my slides is x1 plus x2 minus x3 is equal to 0, x1 minus x2 plus x3 is equal to 2, and 2 times x1 minus x2 minus x3 is equal to negative 3. All right, that's what we start off with, a system of three equations and three unknowns. The first thing we do is we grab the coefficients and the numbers on the right-hand side in a separate column. And we'll have 1, minus 1, 1, 2, 2, minus 1, minus 1, negative 3. Okay, so that's the augmented matrix we start off with. Now, okay, this is a nice example. There's no zero rows, so we don't have to move any rows to the bottom. And there's we already have a pivot up in this corner. So we can just start clearing out entries below the pivot in the first row. So let's send row 2 to row 2 minus row 1. And let's send row 3 to row 3 minus row 1. Minus 2 times row 1. Right, that factor of negative 2 here is precisely so I can cancel the 2 there. These other columns are going to be affected, of course, but what we're focusing on is the getting rid of pivots that sit below pivots. So this will produce a matrix, let's see, 1 minus 1, 1, 1, 1, minus 1, 0 for the first row. That's not changing. Second row, I subtract the first row from the second. 1 minus 1 is 0. Minus 1 minus 1 is negative 2. 1 minus negative 1 is actually plus 2. When you subtract a negative number, it becomes plus. And then 2 minus 0 is 2. And let's see. Oh, we can do the third row as well. Here we'll have 2. Now, I'm going to multiply the second row by 2. So I'll point at these numbers, but I'm also going to multiply each of them by 2. So 2 minus 2 is 0. Negative 1 minus 2, that looks like negative 3. And then minus 1 minus negative 1 times 2 is going to be, yeah, 1, I guess. Yeah. When I subtract off the 2 times this, it becomes a plus sign. And then we have negative 3 minus 0. That will be negative 3. Okay. So I do that correctly. I guess so. 3 minus 3, 1, 3. Okay, good. All right. So now, eventually, we're shooting. We've almost got it in row echelon form. And let's simplify matters a little bit. I mean, it's possible for me to get rid of this term here by multiplying the second row by 3/2 and then subtracting it. But I don't want to multiply by fractions, because then once you introduce fractions into your arithmetic, they tend to hang around and make things more complicated. So let's with the eye of sort of simplifying the calculation, let me go ahead and convert that pivot into a 1, because we're going to need that eventually anyway. So I'll go 1. So I'm simply sending row 2 to minus 1/2 row 2. 1, 1, minus 1, 0, and then 0, 1, minus 1, minus 1. And then the third row is still 0, minus 3, 1, minus 3. All right. Now, getting rid of this guy is going to be a little bit easier. I just take 3 times the second row, add it to the third, and I'll get rid of that leading, that pivot in the third row. So now I'll send row 3, plus 3 times row 2. And I'll end up with 1, 1, minus 1, 0, 0, 1, minus 1, minus 1. Nothing changed in the first two rows. The last row is going to be 0 minus 3 times 0, or 0. Minus 3 plus 3 times 1 is 0. 1 plus 3 times minus 1 is going to be negative 2. And minus 3 plus 3, that's look like 6 maybe. Negative. What's that? Let me see. I'm adding these. Yeah, so 3 plus 3 times minus 1 is going to be negative 6. All right. And let's see. Let's get that last pivot. Try to continue working here. I'll multiply the third row by minus 1/2 to get an augmented matrix 1, 1, minus 1, 0, 0, 1, minus 1, minus 1, and now 0, 0, 1, 2. All right. Sorry? Let's see. Ah, you're right. You're right. 3. Okay. So, row echelon form, pivots are all equal to 1. The last obstruction are these entries that lie above pivots. But they're easily removed. The important point, though, is that now to get rid of these pivots, these entries that lie above pivots, you start in this corner, clear out the entries in the last pivot and last row, then you move up, and then you'll clear out the entry above the pivots in higher rows. So the first thing we'll do is we'll send row 1. If I want to get rid of this term, I add the third row to it. And the second row, I also have a negative 1 there. And so I'll cancel that by adding, row 2 plus row 3. And we'll end up with 1, 1, 0. So what's nice about this is that these calculations have become easier because these 0 entries here, even when I add a row, they're not going to have any contribution. So most times, most of these entries are not going to have any effect in the rows above, but the entry in question, this guy here, it's going to be exactly canceled by the now corresponding entry in the third row. So zero, and then I'm adding the third row to the first, so 3 plus 0 is 3. Then the second row, again, you can see how these add. It'd be 0, 1, 0, 2. 0, 1, 0, 2. And the third row is unchanged, 0, 0, 1, 3. Okay, we're getting close. That's the only problem that's left. And so we'll send the first row to the first row minus the second row. So what we get, we can cancel that guy out, and we'll end up with 1, 0, 0, 3, 0, 1, 0, 2, 0, 0, 1, 3. Now we've reached reduced. Oh, let's see. You're right. You're right. I appreciate your good eyes. Okay. So now we've got a matrix that's in reduced row echelon form. And so now we'll write down the solution. And we just read off. Remember, these columns are attached to variables. So I can just write down the solution. It'll be 1 times x1. Let me put the variables here explicitly. 1 times x1, no term, no contribution, is equal to 1. So that first row corresponds to x1 is equal to 1. We'll have 0 times x1, 1 times x2, but 0 times x3 on the left-hand side of the equation corresponding to the second row. But that's simply going to say that x2 is equal to 2. And then the last row simply says x3 is equal to 3. So I've started with a system of equations. I performed operations that don't change the solution set, and I end up with this set of equations. But this is clearly the solution of the original linear system. Now, generally speaking, in this course, linear algebra, we're not done yet, because we've found the solution, but we want to write the solutions as vectors. And so all you do to finish this problem is form the solution vector x. And it's going to have components 1. First component is 1, second component is 2, and 3. And if you want to display this solution vector as a hyperplane, simply put it inside curly braces to indicate a hyperplane is a set of vectors. In this case, it consists of a single vector. And so this would be your, quote, hyperplane solution. But it's kind of a trivial hyperplane. It consists of a single point. Okay, so I've stepped through all this stuff. And the next thing I want to develop, but I think I'm going to just delay it till Monday, given our technical problems, is I now have given you a technique that you can use to solve linear systems. But if you recall, when I first introduced systems of linear equations, I talked about them geometrically. First thing I showed you is that if you have one equation in m unknowns, that the solution set is a hyperplane of dimension 1 less than the number of variables you started off with. And if you have multiple equations, what you're seeing geometrically is the intersection of hyperplanes. And what was nice about that visual description of the solution set is then you can understand that if you have two different equations that had the same hyperplane, it wouldn't reduce the dimension of the solution set because there was redundancy amongst the equations. Or you could have contradictions amongst your equations, and those would be hyperplanes that don't intersect. What I'll show you on Monday is what happens during this row reduction process when you have redundancies. How is that going to get exposed? And also, what happens when you have contradictions in your equations? It looks like I don't see any obstructions to this process that would fail even if the equations were contradictory.
So that would be like if there was a fourth row and it was 1, 0, 0 with the observed one. That would be
yeah. So here's what will happen. If you have a contradiction in your equations, you'll get a row at the bottom of the matrix where you have a non-zero number in this last column and you have all zeros here. Because in this case, the row reduction will still go through, but what will happen is when you try to convert this to an equation, it'll say 0 times x1 plus 0 times x2 plus 0 times x3 is equal to 1, or simplifying, 0 is equal to 1. That's how you'll spot the contradiction. And what about redundancies? The way redundancies appears, you start off with, say, a system of 3 equations, 3 unknowns, but during your row reduction, you get a zero row. You move it to the bottom of the matrix. A zero row is a vacuous equation. It's basically a say 0 is equal to 0. So instead of having a system of 3 equations and 3 unknowns, one of the equations coming from the augmented matrix is trivial. And so your system is really equivalent to a system of 2 independent equations. And so zero rows at the bottom of the augmented matrix would indicate that your original system had redundancies, and a non-zero entry, well, a pivot in this very last column is going to indicate that your original set of equations had a contradiction. I'll go through that much more slowly and with many examples on Monday. Let me remind you that your homework set 2 is due on Monday, and I'll probably assign homework set 3 to be due the following Monday, okay?
I had a quick question about hyperplanes.
Pardon?
If they intersect the hyperplanes, they're either going to be not connected at all, completely on top of each other, or one intersection point, right? Like, there's never going to be a point where the angle gets it to where the intersection point's like a block rather than a line.
It will always be, and you think of a point, a line as a generalization, or a plane that goes off into infinity in two different directions. It will always be a hyperplane. So it's hard to visualize in 4 dimensions and higher. But so what we do is make an analogy with what we can visualize. And then, yeah, what will always happen when hyperplanes intersect, they'll intersect in a hyperplane of lower dimension.
Okay.
So it'll be a line, a plane, or another hyperplane, but it just will have less degrees of freedom.
Not same dimension or a higher one unless they were parallel.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.